is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
A New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis, the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. He is traveling. However, he's done me the great favor of joining me to comment on news of elections and disordered elections throughout the Americas. We begin in Central America with a news item very fresh from Reuters about Panama. Ricardo Martinelli, Panama ex-president sentenced to decades behind bars. A Panamanian court sentenced former President Ricardo Martinelli to more than 10 years in prison for money laundering, according to the attorney general, threatening the frontrunner's bid for a new term next year. There's the twist. Professor, a very good evening to you. Martinelli, according to polling, is the number one candidate to be president again in the election of 2024. At this point, Panama is disordered. The election process is disordered because there will be charges of influence peddling and legal and political, not legal, justice. And at the same time, we have the critical fact that Panama is the Darien Gap and that cooperation between Panama and interested parties such as the United States about the migrants flowing through the very dangerous gap through Costa Rica all the way to the Mexican border require good relations between Panama City and Washington. Martinelli was a previous president, and he's now elected. He's now sentenced for money laundering. What is the allegation and the conviction for? What did he do, Professor? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. This goes back to a previous corruption case that had been going through a Panamanian courts, and for which Martinelli had previously been extradited from the United States. It's related to a case also involving two of his sons, which were obliged to testify against their father in a U.S. court, not generating too much favorable feeling by Martinelli towards future relations with the United States. But the political significance of this is that this will likely take Martinelli out of the running for the presidency next year. He actually was the front runner among Panamanians who remembered and associated him back with the good times of prosperity in the pre-COVID era. And have been somewhat frustrated with current President Nito Cortizo and a perceived lack of progress on some major infrastructure projects and some Panamanian economic difficulties and financial system difficulties. This will now basically throw the Panamanian elections open with a number of different aspirants, including the current Vice President Jose Carrizo, but others, Romulo Ro, the former President Martin Torrijos, who's running on the behalf of a smaller party, among others, some outlying candidates, one who's running on an anti-corruption and a business campaign, Ricardo Lombana. So on the one hand, this may take off of the table for the moment, a trajectory in which a candidate resentful over corruption charges of the United States comes into power. On the other hand, it also does showcase the degree in which across Latin America in the past year and really more, we've increasingly seen the question of old corruption charges, sometimes real, sometimes fabricated, coming to roost and impacting political trajectories. I mean, we've already seen the question of the judicialization of elections and election candidates heavily criticized in Guatemala, previously in Nicaragua, where it's been used as an instrument by the Ortegas to basically exclude everyone that they didn't want to win in the November 2021 elections. We've seen elections and corruption charges basically take out who is likely the previous frontrunner in the Argentine elections, a Peronist and current Vice President Cristina Fernandez. And so in many ways, it really raises the question of not only, corruption and its impact on politics, but also the proper and improper role of judicial organizations in impacting electoral trajectories and how citizens perceive that and whether or not citizens believe that those judicial decisions are undermining the popular will or whether they're consistent with the institutions that they believe in. And that's an open question, but one that's being actively playing out across Latin America this year.
Panama, is Panama integral to the national security of the United States? Once upon a time, the Panama Canal The answer would have been definitely. Is it still integrated into national security?
Well, it certainly is integrated into the strategic security of the region. Of course, the Panama Canal is not only one of three global logistics hubs, and as such, very important for U.S. and regional logistics flows. But of course, in time of war, and when we look at tensions with China over Taiwan, that becomes more of a possibility. The transit of the Panama Canal becomes a strategic issue, and Chinese influence there, and the way that impacts that. In addition, the migrant flows through the region, from Colombia, Venezuela, through the Darien Gap. That's an issue ultimately as those migrants reach the U.S. border via Mexico. So yes, Panama continues. It also is a financial center impacting the regional and global economy. It continues to be important in a number of different ways.
So disorder in the elections in Panama. Now we go to Guatemala City. This is within these last hours. From La Prensa Latina, Guatemala's Supreme Court Electoral Tribunal told the public ministry, the prosecutor's office, that it will not suspend Semilla Party, led by presidential candidate Bernard Arevalo. After a new move against the group, the public ministry was informed in a document. The request, endorsed by a criminal judge of the judiciary, is a new attempt by the prosecutor's office to suspend the party. Last week, the public ministry caused a political earthquake in suspending Semilla. I stop there, Professor, because you need a scorecard to keep up with this. As I understand it, Arevalo is the candidate of Semilla, which is a new party. He scored very well in the first round of the election against Ms. Torres, who is the wife of a previous president and is understood to be the establishment choice. When last we left this melodrama, the question was, could Arevalo continue his candidacy if Semilla is suspended? This dispute now seems to be between the Supreme Electoral Tribunal, whose authority I am unaware, and the prosecutor's office. Does this resemble the situation we just left in Panama? There's an election process underway, and it's not clear how legal tangles will inhibit candidates of coming forward.
Well, certainly, John, the major difference is probably that the judicial process in Panama and Panamanian institutions, at least in the case of Martinelli, are widely legitimate. And this is a legitimate, solid criminal conviction, although it certainly will impact Panama's trajectory. And in the case of Guatemala, I think there's much more profound questions about how the judiciary and the Attorney General's office, especially the special prosecutor against corruption, FECI, has been used to basically take out candidates that could threaten the elite establishment. As you recalled, in the run-up to the current elections in round one, which was open to a large number of different candidates on June 25th, you had the disqualification of a number of the candidates that could threaten the system, including at the last minute, businessman Carlos Pineda. But in the elections which actually occurred on the 25th, again, you had the surprise that the anti-corruption candidate of Semilla, Bernardo Arevalo, had come in second. And that really set the stage for him to go head-to-head against the establishment candidate, the former First Lady and Sandra Torres. But again, what we saw is the continuing judicial struggle there, and the Attorney General struggle first it was a series of different recounts. There was initially a 30 June recount, which said that the results seem legitimate. Then there was another recount called for by other parties who were alleging fraud, again, with the intention of delaying the count or possibly finding means for taking Arevalo off the scorecard. And then there was a postponing of the final decision. That final decision basically came in and said, we couldn't find anything, to change substantially the results of the election. And then if that was not enough, FECI, the Attorney General's office, said, we're going to begin this investigation and disqualify Arevalo's party because supposedly he had improperly registered 5,000 votes. And so it was actually the Supreme Court who stepped in and said, no, you can't disqualify a candidate. This will stand. So it appears that we're going now towards the originally scheduled August 20 runoff between Torres and Arevalo. And if Guatemalans' frustration was what caused them to rally around Arevalo as the anti-corruption candidate in the first place, these later machinations probably will help to make more likely, if not ensure, that Arevalo could be elected, by those Guatemalans who were frustrated with this. But certainly the drama does continue. And certainly, as we saw in Panama, it highlights what is occurring in many different countries, this the role of judicial politics and attorney general's offices in the political trajectory of the regime. In some cases, a legitimate thing which reflects ongoing corruption. In other cases, its use, its weaponization, its use of a tool by elites who want to essentially disqualify contenders.
Again, Guatemala is a significant presence in Central America because it's part of the Northern Triangle that has been understood to be a driver for the mass migration north, fleeing from poverty, narco-terrorism, and a complete distrust of the government. So the election process here is vital not only to the people of Central America, but to the United States and the migration story. Do I say that correctly, Professor?
Absolutely. Guatemala has been critical to drug flows. It's been critical to migration flows to the region, as well as a source, an origin country for many of the migrants. Guatemala, in political terms, also, with the shift of populism in El Salvador and the shift to a radical left movement with Xiomara Castro in neighboring Honduras. Guatemala, within the Northern Triangle, has been, one of a increasingly small number of countries that have been willing to cooperate with the United States and also that continues to recognize U.S. ally Taiwan as a legitimate government. And so really the future of support for U.S. positions in Central America, as well as a support for Taiwan and its legitimacy, among other issues, are all really kind of up for grabs with respect to this election.
We go immediately to another part of the Northern Triangle, El Salvador. Bukele is running for re-election, despite the fact that he's supposed to only serve one term and there is no re-election. However, at the same time, Nayib Bukele, the young and dynamic president of El Salvador, remains popular. Why? Salvadorian police arrested more than 100 Colombians for their alleged involvement in operating a microfinancing scheme that laundered money from drug running and gang activities. Reuters goes on to remind us that Bukele has jailed around 70,000 suspects in a mass dragnet, leading to a sharp reduction in violent crime. It would appear, despite Bukele's indifference to civil rights, that there is sympathy, great celebration of him in El Salvador. Is this attracting admirers throughout the region? Elsewhere, Professor, Bukele is... to say he's a maverick is an understatement.
Well, certainly El Salvador had three interrelated problems, gangs, drugs, and in underdevelopment. And that interaction of problems, of course, had caused the out-migration of El Salvador and something like 2 million plus of El Salvador's population was living abroad. So with respect to the gang piece, Bukele has taken drastic action, jailing on almost 70,000 suspected members. Now, about 10% of those are believed to be improperly or accidentally put in jail. But when things work, the population supports you, even if you accidentally jail 7,000 people. But you're right, because El Salvador's insecurity because of the jailing of the gang members has dramatically decreased. People can now go in the streets; they don't have to pay extortion to gang members anymore. Bukele is enormously popular, something like 80%, depending on the polls. The second problem has never really been solved, which is, again, that you have drug flows that are coming up from Colombia and Venezuela and in other places, through Central America, which sometimes includes El Salvador. And so with traffickers, with others, and then all of the other criminal elements that have come to be associated with that. And so in many ways, the arrest of the 100 Colombians on this microfinance scheme, which is really part of a broader set of ways in which people launder drug money in El Salvador, which is a dollarized economy. So it's a good place to get rid of dollars. So that shows that in some areas, Bukele is still working on enforcing the law, at least where it doesn't conflict with his interests. And as you saw although the El Salvadoran constitution says that you cannot run for re-election. Bukele controls two-thirds of the Congress. He controls the Supreme Court. He's enormously popular. And so the court actually came up with a ruling saying, if you step down for a brief time, technically that counts as not being re-elected. So you can be re-elected. And so El Salvador is both, in places like Honduras, where you have Xiomara Castro copying Bukele's application of a state of emergency and jailing people because it seems to work. But it certainly does raise some concerns about if you are successful but trample on the civil rights of people, and people want to copy that, what does that mean for the future trajectory of democracy and human rights in the region?
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.